Hello, we are live. Hello and welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us for this live stream Microsoft Reactor event. My name is Rebecca Karen, and I am the New York Reactor event planner. I am happy to welcome Scott Hanselman and Sharita Ousley today with us for the first episode of Let's Learn C Sharp. This session will run for approximately 60 minutes. We'll be answering questions throughout with potential time at the end to finalize on any remaining questions. We encourage everyone to check into this session. I will be dropping the check-in code into the chat momentarily and also our code of conduct. At this time, I will have Sharita and Scott join us.
All right.
Hello, welcome.
Good morning.
How's it
Good
going?
morning. How's it going?
We're live. It's so weird. You know, when you're on YouTube, you think you're filming a YouTube, and it's like people who are watching right now might be confused because they're like, is this real? Are these live human beings? We are live right now, and I am in Portland, Oregon, and it's very early in the morning for me right now. All right. So, Rebecca, we're going to have you step
I'm going to
backstage.
pop out. Yep.
And
That
then
sounds
Sharita
great.
and I are going to try to figure this out. So what we're going to do right now, there we
Yes, I will
go.
switch over to your screen. There we
Okay.
go.
And we'll have you just step away. Cool. So, hey, everybody, look, I see Alex in the chat there says, hello, we see you and we're live right now. All right. So what we've got here is 3 days of 1 hour a day where we're going to learn some C sharp. We're going to do this at a pretty basic level. This is a beginner class. So if you have advanced questions, if you have 300 level questions, this is probably not the place to do it because we want folks to learn C sharp and maybe we'll do an advanced class another day. So my name is Scott Hanselman and I work at Microsoft here on .NET. And Sharita, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Sharita Ousley, and I work in the M365 Admin Center Group.
Okay.
As
And you work on in TypeScript, actually, don't you?
yes, with a little bit of the C sharp on the back end. So,
So I thought it would be cool because we're learning C sharp together if we bring Sharita in, because TypeScript is a language that has some C sharpiness in it. But Sharita, I think, is a really typical engineer because she's learning C sharp and getting deeper in C sharp, but has experience in another language. And a lot of the folks that are listening probably have some experience in maybe a little Python or a little TypeScript or whatever, and they want to get deeper into C sharp. So I thought that would be cool. So you'll have the TypeScript perspective, and I don't know TypeScript. So here we have two people who know two different languages. So that'll be cool.
Yes,
All right.
definitely.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share my screen. And I'm going to show you all to how to follow along, and we're going to install this education pack. This is called the .NET Education Pack. So let's go ahead and have Rebecca put our screen big here. Now, on my machine here, I've got Visual Studio Code and a program. We're going to get deeper into this a little later, but this is some code. What I'm going to do to show you what we're going to do here is I'm going to go and run the Windows Sandbox. The Windows Sandbox is something that's nice for testing things. So this is going to allow me to have a brand new free computer here. So I'm just going to open it up. It's kind of like a virtual machine. Sandbox is great for testing. You don't have to do this, but I wanted to show you how to set up a free, you know, like a total machine from scratch. So let's say here's a computer from scratch. So I'm going to go here and I'm going to say .NET or DOT.NET. Now, if you want, you can go and Google with Bing for Learn C Sharp or Google with Google. And if you find the .NET website, it'll look kind of like this. DOT.NET.microsoft.com. This page here, .NET. I'll go ahead and make this really large to make sure that that's clear. This is where we're going to go right here. And specifically, we're going to go to learn to code. So .NET.microsoft.com/learn-to-code. And it's that learn to code part. And this is something that no one has seen before. We're actually kind of launching this right here. I think only Sharita saw this a couple of days ago because this is a thing called the .NET Education Pack. And if you know you're at the right place, if it says hi, friends. Now, when you installed your TypeScript, Sharita, you probably installed like what the TypeScript SDK, and you had to
Yes.
download three or four things to make that happen.
Yes. So long ago, too.
Yeah, it's probably a long time ago. You know, we tend to install stuff and then we just kind of leave it there and it,
it does. Yes.
So with .NET and C Sharp, you usually install an SDK, a software development kit. And so when people say SDK, that's what that means. So again, if I have a tendency to say a three-letter acronym, you can keep me honest, Sarita, or folks in the chat can say, hey, you know, what's that acronym mean? Software development kit. And C Sharp is a language. And then you'll hear me say .NET a lot. And I know that when you were starting .NET, Sarita, you found that confusing because people seem to interchange the two titles.
Yes, for sure.
So do you know the difference between .NET and C Sharp? Because I find a lot of people get really confused about that and don't know the difference.
My understanding is .NET is the framework that we write the C Sharp code.
So the C Sharp language is your code that you're going to have sitting on top of the .NET framework. And there's different .NET. So .NET can also be kind of considered an ecosystem or a community. And that can be a little bit confusing because it turns out there's actually more than one language that you can use. You can use F Sharp and Visual Basic, but we're going to talk about C Sharp. So .NET is the libraries and all that kind of stuff. So I guess you use TypeScript. TypeScript turns into JavaScript, and then there's a JavaScript community, and you can use their libraries too?
Yes, and we're building it on top of React. So
that's a good point.
Yeah, so it's a little bit different still because.
Yeah. So you're using React, and with React, that's a programming style and also a UI. You have components and things like that. So within .NET, we also have UI components and things like that as well. So that's a great point. So the C-sharp language is part of the .NET ecosystem. So when I came here to the homepage here with .NET, it says free, cross-platform, open source. Cross-platform means it runs anywhere. And you can build all kinds of apps. So this is a thing that I think C-sharp is really cool at that maybe other languages aren't as cool about, is that you can make web apps. You can even work on React. You can do desktop apps. You can make games. A lot of games are written in C-sharp. You can do cloud stuff. And you can scroll down here. And if you want later on, you can maybe watch our video series where we teach different ways of doing .NET and C-sharp. We talk about, you know, on the Mac. We talk about doing game development. So there's lots and lots of videos and a great community to answer your questions. But what we did for you all today is we made this Learn to Code pack. So again, that is at .net.microsoft.com/learn-to-code, dotnet.microsoft.com/learn-to-code. I'm going to hit download for Windows. There's also a Mac one. So I'll hit download for Windows. And it's going to start downloading this thing here that says .NET coding pack. And when I open that, it's going to bring up a little installer. And you'll know it's the right installer if you see the little .NET bot. That's our buddy. You know how there's like the Python elephant and there's the Node turtle with a rocket ship on his back. Everybody's got their little mascot. That's our mascot. So I'll hit next. And then he's going to get to work. Now what he's doing is he's installing Visual Studio Code. And you know, Sarita, you've already installed it. I've got it installed on my machine as well. But it's going to install the C-sharp compiler, the .NET libraries, and all the things that we need, as well as a new thing that no one's ever seen before. That is called .NET notebooks. And if you've ever heard of Jupyter notebooks, it's kind of like Microsoft Word, where you have like prose, like actual text in English with code. So it's like some paragraphs and some code. So paragraphs and some code. And it's kind of a cool way to learn that. A question in the chat here from Abhishek, who is using Linux or Ubuntu. Yeah, you can go ahead and install .NET on Ubuntu if you want to. You can follow the instructions. We don't have an installer for the pack that we're showing, but you can definitely go to the .NET website. We'll go up here. You can click downloads. You can go and say all downloads. And we actually have a section where we talk about getting Linux. So if you go and say Linux, here's your how to install .NET on Linux. And you can also install Visual Studio Code on Linux. And Ubuntu, I believe, includes Visual Studio Code. So that should be easier for you. All right. So our little guy has said cool, and it's working out great. So I hit finish, and he's going to launch Visual Studio Code. And again, this is a fresh computer, so this will be the same thing that you'll see. And it'll start kind of, look at this little, what is this, a progress bar here. And it's going to say installing .NET Interactive, this interactive notebook. is going to pop up, and it's going to say getting started with C Sharp for beginners. I'm going to make that screen really big. And these are little notifications that I'll go ahead and close these notifications. Now, this is where things get a little interesting. This is not like how you write a C Sharp program, right? Usually you open like a project file and things like that. You've done that in Visual Studio 2019, the bigger Visual Studio, right, Sharita?
Yes.
And that has a project file, and it's like a whole thing. This is kind of cool where you've got some text, like Markdown, from like Markdown in GitHub, and then some Markdown. And then I got some code right here just sitting in a cell. This is called a cell. And it's got a little play button by it. So if I hit play on that, it's going to start and say hello world, which is kind of cool. And I can, you know, change this code. I can change this Markdown. I can even add my own if I wanted to, like, start typing. Here is some text I wrote. I think I can go hello. Yeah, see? Like, it's Markdown, right? And then close it up. So this is kind of a cool way that teachers and students can share these notebooks. This file right now is called a DIB. A DIB is a .NET Interactive Book. And this book here is what we're going to kind of go through, and this is going to help us learn C Sharp. But it's worth pointing out that a little later, probably either later today or tomorrow, we'll get into here. And this is really interesting, isn't it? Because here we see console.writeline, hello world, which you see in a lot of apps. And then there's like all this other stuff. You know how, like, when you started, Sharita, you probably, when you learned to code, they told you to ignore all this, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And how do you think about that? Like, when you do TypeScript, you're learning the language, but then you got to learn all the other crap around it. How do you know what to ignore and what not to ignore?
It's really hard when you have all of these new things thrown at you and you want things to work. And so what I've learned is if you're practicing or you're trying to get something to work, you have to then go back and figure out, okay, what's important here and what these things actually mean. So yeah. For instance, here, you know, you can't even start this. You can't code this without having the using statement or having the namespace because it won't draw from the right project. So you kind of go back and you figure out step by step, okay, what does this mean? You know, how is this useful? So
that's a great point. So what you're going to have to do with some of the things that we're going to show you, like Sharita says, is you're going to ignore stuff. And then later you're going to go back and you're going to say, oh, yeah, I get what that is. They told me to ignore it, but now I know what that is. So for now, we're going to ignore some of these things. And that's what's cool about these notebooks is that the using, like you pointed out, the other stuff, it's in there. You just can't see it. We're telling people to ignore it. And this is a cool way for us to learn about the syntax rather than getting into the weeds about usings and namespaces and all kind of stuff like this. And to the folks that are on the chat here, we're going to be doing three classes. They're just an hour long, and they're going to be 3, 1, 2, 3. This is number one. We'll do the same one. We'll do another one tomorrow. That'll be a little bit more advanced, and maybe we'll make a web page in 2 days, which will be kind of cool. So when I said hello world and I hit play, here in the .NET Interactive Notebook, it is going to compile that code and turn it into something and then output it right here. So let's see if that's real. We'll say hi, Sharita, and then we'll hit play. You see, look, it took like no time at all, and it said hello, and it put that output right in here. So this is really actual code, and we're editing it within the larger Visual Studio code, but it's not a project. We can't take this notebook and like put it on an iPhone or, you know, make an app yet. We're just learning about the language syntax, okay? Cool. Now, console is a thing that's built in. I know that in TypeScript, what do you say? Console.log? Console.
Yes.
Okay.
.log.
Yeah, .log. So in TypeScript, where does that go? It goes into the F12 browser tools, or does it, it doesn't output on the web page, right?
Yes. The development tools in the
right
console.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in this context, the console is our development tools, right? We're not really outputting anywhere. If we wrote this as an app, if we made like a little console app, and a console app would be like if you came down here and you ran the command prompt, it would output to this console. So console is kind of an abstract concept in this way. So when you say console.WriteLine, console is in this context right here. And then when I type console below it, you can do this too. You can take console and hit the dot. And you see how it look? These are all the things consoles can do. This is really common in every language, isn't it? I mean, yes. TypeScript does this, Python does this. It's you have a thing, you have an object, and then you have the stuff that it can do. Terry, if you're having an echo, it might be that you're on YouTube. You have two tabs open. You might have two different things open, but we definitely don't have an echo over here. Okay, so I can say console.WriteLine again, and I can say here is another line. Okay, and you even get a help that pops up. You see here when I typed in console.WriteLine, it says it writes the specified string with the line terminator, and I'm going to hit play. Now notice here I don't have a semicolon at the end. Let's remove this semicolon here. And let's, do you think this is going to work? Any take a bet?
Let's find out. No.
Nope, mm-hmm. Exactly. We did not work. It says colon expected. Now, I don't know about you, but when I started programming and I started getting errors, they were really threatening. Like I felt stressed about these errors. Yes. And I don't know why.
I still do.
Yeah?
Not these small ones, like, you know.
Yeah.
If you see the red squiggle there, you already know that an error is expected. But
that's a great point. There is a red squiggle there. And that those squiggles make a big difference. So I'm going to hover over that red squiggle. It's kind of like a spelling error in Word, right?
Yes.
So that's trying to tell me it's going to be okay. And look, that's not very threatening.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
Expected a semicolon. I think it's when you start seeing these where it's like, what's, am I supposed to know that number? And like, what are these? Well, that's line one, and then you have to go 37, mm-hmm. Characters in, and then that's the code. And apparently that's like C# error number 1000 and whatever. Okay.
Well, we seem to have a big error here in the comments now.
Okay. That's a great point. So some of the folks in the comments may be having an error. If you install the coding pack, again, that would be at .net.microsoft.com/learn-to-code. That will install the interactive notebooks. So if you're just doing this in Visual Studio code, you might have some challenges. You want to get this coding pack. But if you're getting that error, you can notice down here, we have a section that says, already have .NET, go and install the interactive notebook. So that link is below the download here. So for the couple of people in the chat who are having trouble, take a look at that. Okay, so let's go back to this error here. We can kind of ignore this. There's good detail that this is just a unique thing that you can go and see. And then I'll go ahead and add my semicolons and we'll hit play. Nice. And it works. So that's not too bad. That's cool. Now, this is the object console, and the console can do all kinds of stuff. So again, we saw we can say console dot, and I can say console dot write line or. And in the future, you can even read keys and make games or stuff. You know, it all starts here. But when I said write line and I open this parentheses up, this can be a little confusing. You see this 1 of 18? There's lots of different things I can give to a console. Yeah, this introduces the concept of variables. Like, look, there's an int. It can take an integer and a double. And I found this a little stressful as well because it's like, wow, there's like 18 different versions.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. It shows that there's a lot underneath this. Yeah. It's a lot more than just like strings, right? So let's scroll down a little bit and let's talk about variables. Okay. Now, variables in C# are, I'll be interested in how they're different or the same from JavaScript or TypeScript.
Mm-hmm.
C# is what's called strongly typed. Right. So strongly typed means you got to tell me the type. And once you tell me, you can't really change it. And JavaScript's kind of like loosey-goosey,
loose.
Right?
Yeah, it is. It'll figure it out. Mm-hmm.
That's a great point. It'll figure it out. So that's a thing that sometimes when you're coming from JavaScript or from a new language that people find C# a little bit like, why are you kind of being so strict?
Yes. Right? Yes.
But then TypeScript, makes that strictness and adds it on top of JavaScript and like says, you're going to be strict and you're going to do things the way I want it to be done.
It does. It does. Yep. And it wouldn't compile unless it's fixed. So that is a good point.
That is a good point. So here I'm saying string a friend equals Bill. We'll change that. And I'm saying, hey, there's a string. And then the name is another thing people stress out about. The name can be anything. Like that variable there, we can make that anything we want. But people sometimes think it needs to be specific. It's really like, it's up to you. It can be whatever you want.
Yep.
But then what happened here? Squiggly time. Right? A friend is not a thing, right? So if I say string and I give it a silly name, let's go back and we'll call it friend. Let's do this. We'll make it close, but not exact. So we said string friend. And then we have console.write line a friend. It's like, the name a friend doesn't exist. I don't know what a friend is. These need to line up, right? So let's make them line up. And then you wait a moment and then that squiggly will go away. And that squiggly, it's compiling in the background. It's like, it's thinking, it's like looking at the code in the background. You're gonna say something?
Could we talk about the, people may be wondering about the camel case, Pascal case, what kind of case? Do we need to worry about that here?
Yeah, that's a great point. So Sarita used that term camel case. Let's go ahead and make a little space here. And camel, like it's like a hump, like a camel's hump. Camel case would be like having a hump like this. So the first letter is lowercase, and in the middle you have the hump of the camel. And then there's what's called kebab case, where people go like that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know. And then there's lowercase, there's uppercase. Sometimes people make their constants uppercase. And then there's a thing that's called Pascal casing. I don't know why it's called it. I guess Pascal did it first. It was a language like this. That's really style. Like, you know how in English, it's like names are capitalized. There's a lot of people that will argue you all the way to the ends of the earth because they're like, no, this should have said, they'll like do this. They'll put the type at the beginning of the name. That's called Hungarian naming. And then, like, if I had an int, I would say like this.
Mo.
And they'll say that's the way to do it, right? That's really up to you. You get to decide your style. So when you joined a team, when you joined Office 365, my guess is that you probably inherited some code.
Yes.
And they had a style?
Correct. Yep. And for JavaScript, React, we primarily use camel case. But I noticed in the C-sharp code, it's Pascal.
And that means that the people who started yours probably decided to have that be a certain way. I think when folks are starting, that like matters less. But when you get a lot of code, like you work on, you know, Office 365 and Microsoft 365, and you got thousands of files, you kind of want a style. So I think you just need to pick a style that works for you. More than, you know, to start. I wouldn't sweat it when you're getting started, right? Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and play that. There you go. And that worked right there. So this string, a friend, we've declared that that string exists right here. Okay. We've declared that that string exists. And now from this point down, it's going to keep existing. So here we said, there's a string called a friend. Now down here, we can add another friend. And we're going to reassign the variable's value. So it is Sharita here. It's going to be Scott here. I hit play, and now it's Scott. Okay. So we can change the value of these variables. But what if I said Scott equals 99?
All right. The type.
Yeah. And there we go. Just like we were talking about before. And then the type. Now the type is a thing, right? Well, you decided like 5 minutes ago, we were talking about strings and now you're changing it up and you're stressing me out. And this is again, where we start getting into messages that can be a little threatening. They're really like correct, like they're well phrased, but they start using words like implicitly convert and it can be a little bit confusing. And you see that the error number is different. But it's like, you're asking me to change this type without any hints, no advice. You're just saying do it. And you can't do that in C sharp, and that's strong typing. Now in JavaScript, you can just change it and the world continues, I guess.
Well, since we're using TypeScript, no, that's not allowed.
Yeah. So in TypeScript, you can't do that. And in JavaScript, you can. And that's why people like TypeScript, right? It's strict. All right. So the data type that we're using here is called a string. And this is, I think, pretty interesting because there's lots of different ways to take two strings and put them together. And this here in our plus sign is called an operator. And this is a little bit of an abstract concept, you know, but it's worth pointing out, you know, when you say 2 + 2, you get that the plus is going to do a thing to the two twos. But what does it mean to like plus some strings? Somebody had to decide what that meant. You know, what does it mean to like add two strings together? So someone said, all right, well, if you have two strings, you can add them together and it will concatenate them, and that it works. It's kind of intuitive. This feels like it should work. You know, every language is different though. This is newish, called string interpolation. And again, I don't know why they make the names so like complicated. Like interpolation is kind of weird. And I'm actually going to just take a second and I'm going to switch back over to my own machine, because remember that I was over there in the sandbox. Yes. And if you get lost, you can hit Control Shift P and you can click .NET getting started. If you're looking for that DIB file and you need to get it back. And again, this was all installed from the coding pack. So I'm back over in my own personal Visual Studio Code, and that's going to allow me to do some zooming in. So I'm going to go and run each of these cells one at a time. Actually, I'll change our friend names because they're wrong over here. And then we'll go and we'll run it and then run it. I'm running them in order. And then we go here. Okay. And this is going to allow me now to zoom in and point at stuff, which I think is going to make things a little easier. Cool.
Yeah.
So string interpolation is a new feature in C sharp. And if I click on that, I can go into the docs. And this is kind of interesting. Let's look at this string here. This is pretty complicated. Hello, name, today is day of the week, it's, and then something crazy going on here, and then now. So you could imagine if you were doing that with pluses, it would get a little out of control.
Oh my goodness.
You probably found code like this that someone else wrote back in the day, and it ends up on multiple lines, and you're thinking a lot.
Yeah.
It's no fun. And when it gets long like this, wouldn't it be easier to put the variable name in the string? You see how it changes color? This is enabled by adding that dollar sign. So once you add that dollar sign, it turns that string into like a more interesting string that can be used like this. So that doesn't work. See how a friend is yellow? Mm-hmm. And as soon as I put the dollar sign there, it turns white.
Variable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It knows about the variable. Right. Exactly. This is just a string. I mean, let's try this actually. Yeah. See, it's like, it's just outputting the string because just because you use these curly braces, nobody cares. But as soon as you put it into interpolation mode, again, another example where they give a complicated name to a thing, then I can start using the names of things. So like we've got a friend, we had two friends. So let's go down and let's actually have two variables. We'll have first friend and we'll have second friend. And we'll go and run that. Okay, there you go. Now let's try it without the dollar sign.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think, this is a trick question on it, not a trick question, but a little bit of like context, because languages grow, like we add words, right? Mm-hmm. We're adding words all the time. Why do you think you need this here? Like, why didn't they just make it automatic so that when you use these curly braces that it would automatically, you know, output the values of first friend? Want to guess on that?
Why there?
Yeah, why? Well, not why there. More, it's like, why do they need a marker? Why do they need a thing here to do that? Like, they could have put anything, but they needed to basically make the string different. could have just basically lit it up, right? They could have just made all strings smart one day. C-sharp new version came out, right? But remember you said you came to a code base that was full of existing code, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if we decided to start changing the behavior of your code and we didn't tell you? So they needed a thing, a marker, so that they could maintain compatibility. They didn't want to break all your existing code, because you might have existing strings that use these little curlies. The little curlies are the thing that tells you that it's a variable name. You see?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. But, you know, you might have strings lying around. I can't do brackets. You see? Everything's different. It's this here that gave them a way to say, like, well, that's an old style string and that's a new style string. So they needed to give a marker. Nope. Now I've got myself all confused. And look, I typed a bunch of stuff accidentally and it's doing its best to tell me what's going on. And it's putting the squiggly where it thinks it is. And then once you get no squigglies, you can run it again and then it'll work. Okay. Now remember that console had a bunch of stuff. There's our stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have these variables like friend that are strings. What do you think is going to happen if I had first friend dot? Is it going to have stuff?
It's not going to have anything.
Well, it's a string though. Our strings are objects. So
You can too. Yeah.
Right. So it's got string stuff. So
there we go. To list. Yes. To upper.
Yeah. To list. To upper. Mm-hmm. These are stringy things. Yeah. That's a good question. Let's do this. To upper. Try that. Let's say first friend equals first friend dot to upper. I don't even know. What will this do? Yeah. Say, look. So that's cool. So this object has a bunch of string stuff. So those are hanging off of. I like to think of them as hanging off of. It is a lot of stringy stuff. Thank you, Abhishek. Exactly. Terry Andre is pointing out, yes, it will have a method. It'll have a method. And this is that this symbol here, this symbol in this little box, I guess, means method. I don't really know what these little boxes mean. Right? Let's see. I see a key here.
Yes.
Or wrench, rather, pardon me. That's a property. So a property is like a characteristic of something like Sharita.height, right? As opposed to Sharita.sitdown or Sharita.standup.
Mm-hmm.
Methods are verbs, right?
Yes.
And properties are like characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
Scott.age, things like that. So here we said-
a really great way to think of it.
Isn't that nice? You like that?
Mm-hmm. I like that.
I appreciate that. All right. So let's try this. What if we took this method to upper? I'm going to delete this. And what if we said this? Let's say second friend dot, and we'll put to upper in here. Now I'm going to do this wrong first, and then I'll do it right. This is a bad error message, and you're going to bump into bad error messages sometimes. And by a bad error message, I mean it doesn't tell you what you need to know. And mm-hmm. you probably bump into these twice a day, right?
I do.
Yeah. Super annoying. Abhishek is asking, why are the properties or methods capitalized? This is a great question here, because we were talking about when you inherit a code base, someone who, you know, made that code base had to decide what they were going to do things with. Are they going to name them? These people decided to do their casing like this, where each word is uppercase. Mm-hmm. So some worlds do it like this. Like, I think, do you all do this like this in TypeScript?
JavaScript, yes, is lower. It's actually the U would be.
The U would be like mm-hmm. this. Yeah. So every language got a style. So the reason that the properties and methods are capitalized is because somebody decided to back in the day. That's the answer. And that's a .NET style. You can see that like console.WriteLine has a capital C and then uppercase is here. Now, this error message really kind of sucks. I think this part here is useless. Like I would honestly have to go and search for that. I don't even know what that means. It's true though, right? I mean, you got to be real.
Yeah. But
this, I think, possibly does tell us what, and a lot of people don't even read the error messages, right? You just like see the error and you go, ugh, and then you freeze. Got to read the error. So what's it trying to tell us here? We're saying second friend dot to upper that's a method. We didn't mean to go and get like dot length for a property. This might work actually. My friends are Scott and Seven. That's how many characters are in Sharita. But I said two upper, but I did not put the...
Yep,
there you go. Thank you. I did not invoke it. So it's this, these parentheses here that invoke the thing. And we didn't pass anything into two upper. We didn't give it an argument. So it didn't matter. And let me actually go here and we'll go to lower. Oops. We'll run that. Now, this is interesting. I just realized that look how I'm actually using the Beyonce theme. That's why my colors are pink. This is a cool theme you can install.
It's one of my favorites.
You like this one? It's really fun. Yeah, it's actually called it's called Beyonce. So if you go to beyoncetheme.com, they've got it for Bash. This is done by Mina Markham, and it's a really like super loud, awesome Visual Studio Code theme. It's super fun, so you can check that out. Okay, I noticed that, look, it's italics, and it's white and like turned, right? But when I went like this, Visual Studio Code is trying to help me out, right? They're doing that work to make things easier for you, because if I took all this code and I just put this in a notepad, I mean, can you imagine writing code like this all day? It just blurs your eyes. And
yes,
that's how we did it back in the day.
Oh, no.
Yes. even worse, it was like black screen and it was a green screen, like warped, you know, and you're just looking at it and you're like, I remember once that I think I probably spent 3 hours looking for a semicolon, and it was, and there's no squigglies, there's nothing. And you just have to go click.
Wow.
Look right there. If I remove that semicolon, what happens on the second line? It doesn't tell me it's missing a semicolon, but it does say something's not right. TypeScript do that too?
Yep.
That kind of stuff is like, let the computer do some work. Let the computer do some work. So Terry's asking what the name for the parentheses is. I think this is technically called a method invocation, these two parentheses. Yeah.
Yep.
So we're invoking that method. And then sometimes those methods take parameters. For example, this is actually a little bit of trivia here for you. I don't know if you've done anything in multiple languages, like have you ever written code that output French or Spanish or something else, or the site you work on might handle that for you.
Yes.
So when you say two
like
upper,
a link.
Yeah. So if I say two upper, there's two choices. One of them takes a culture. Here's a little trivia. If you take the letter I, this is random, but it's fun to have random trivia sometimes in the middle of a thing. Did you know that there's lowercase I and capital I, right? You've probably done that before. Well, in Turkey, their lowercase I is different. They have... that's their lowercase I. It doesn't have a dot. So when you take a lowercase I and you make it an uppercase I, it looks like this. Okay, that makes sense. But then in Turkey, if you take a I with a dot and you make an uppercase I in the Turkish language, you would get an uppercase I with a dot.
Oh.
Which makes sense. Like, we should have done that. Like, that would have been cool. But then we'd have four eyes, right? So this means something really interesting. And this is kind of a little bit of an obscure thing, but something to think about. If you say friend.toUpper and Sharita has an I in your name, it went from a lowercase with a dot to an uppercase. Because we have a culture that we're using right here, which is English in the United States. But if we were in Turkey, maybe we would pass that culture in to two upper. And then it would change how your name was capitalized.
So what would that look like? Could we
Well, so let's go and see. So we would go down here and let's say your name would end up looking like this. Right? And then the culture, you'd have to get that culture from somewhere, right?
Okay, gotcha.
You got it? And then so you might think, okay, that's kind of cool or whatever, but what would happen then if in the database it was stored like this? And then later on, you're like, I'm going to compare these two strings. Like maybe I'm typing in my password or whatever. Someone from the US saved the password, or not a password. Maybe that password's not a good example. First name, last name, whatever.
Yes.
And then you end up doing a two upper with a different culture, and these two are not going to match. And you're going to be like, what happened?
Yeah.
And here's the part that's hard. And this is part of the things about computers that's kind of difficult. There's nothing here to hint you to that. You're just getting that culture from elsewhere. So there's explicit or specific variables. And then there's like hidden ones. Like culture comes from your computer. If we have a friend on the live stream right now in Turkey, they're going to have a different experience than you and I will when they're playing with our notebook. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, very.
Yeah. So they're going to have to either set it explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to say, we're going to do it like this. Or they're going to have to at least be aware, right? So that's interesting stuff.
Yeah, okay. Very cool to know.
Yeah. So here inside of our string, we're calling a method. We can scroll down a little bit and we can see that we're using like length. So you can say Scott has X letters. Shrita has 7 letters. We can pull out that property and that works just great. And then all those different things that strings have, they have methods like trimming. So here's a string with a whole bunch of extra text, bunch of spaces, right? So it's like space, 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 hello world, space, space, space. We can trim it. They just put brackets here to show. The brackets don't matter. The brackets are like, I could go like that if I wanted to, right? And then we hit star. See how hello world has the stars around it?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But then if we go down here, let's change that and make it stars. Trim just the start. It's trimming off the space. Because you probably, like, you know, you pass in a last name and you forget to trim off a space, and then your last name has a space forever. Okay. Then you can do things like replaces, search and replace. So here I'm going to replace the word hello with the word greetings. So we pass in hello world. We print it out. Then we replace every instance of hello. Let's say if we have hello world, hello, hello world, hello. We have hello in there 3 times. It's going to replace them all. All right. And we saw, yeah, go ahead.
Is it good practice to remember all of these methods, or should we just know how to use them or use the IntelliSense to help?
That's a great question. So let's think about it in the context of learning another language that's not English, for example. We're speaking in English because we're in the US right now. But if we were speaking in Spanish, yes, I should remember like the word for hunger.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can't remember it, I do know that it should exist. And there's a difference between remembering the exact word and remembering that it ought to exist.
Okay.
So I don't know TypeScript, but I'm pretty sure there's got to be a way to replace stuff. I don't know if it's called replace, or if I don't know if you have a thing called two upper, but you should, right? Like it's a thing. So I don't remember the word and I don't get all stressed out. Like if I started typing in Python, I would be like, how do you two upper a string in Python? How do you say hunger in Spanish? I don't think that it's okay. I don't try to memorize this stuff. There's a lot here.
A lot.
But like, let's look at it this way. Trimming, trimming spaces is a thing. Whether it's trim end or end trim or start trim or what. It's trimming spaces. I'll go and I'll type in trim and then I'll find it. So IntelliSense is like, you know, a helper, but it's not necessarily a crutch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. I don't want to remember all this stuff. Like let the computer do its work. All right. So then we can go and search for things. This is interesting. So we have a contains. Now, again, every language is different. There's probably a way in TypeScript to go and search for, like, does it contain something? Mm-hmm. But now we're starting to get into types here, and this is interesting. Notice that it says true and false. It doesn't say yes or no. It didn't return the string. We asked it a question. We said console.writeline, and then we passed, here's the opener, and here's the close, and we said song lyrics dot contains goodbye, and it said return, and we looked for greetings, and it said false. So song lyrics dot contains, if we hover over the word contains, right there. When you're reading docs, I think this is the same in every language. There's a declaration of what the method does. This method is four strings. Song lyrics is a string. And it takes a string. Here's a string here. There's five different versions, but we're going to ignore that. And it returns a Boolean. Returns mm-hmm. a Boolean. And that's called the method signature. There's only one contains in the universe right here. Well, there's five, but bear with me. But that returns an integer. So it returns a Boolean, rather. So if we went like this, pull that out of there, put it here. Okay, it's mad because I don't have my semicolon. Put that there. Well, we didn't do anything because we didn't put anything in here, right? So we didn't put anything in here and we didn't save the Boolean. The Boolean just mm-hmm. got returned and it's in the air now.
Yes.
Okay. Boolean has it. I don't know. I'm just making up variable names. Okay. Well, here we saved it, but we didn't do anything with it. There we go. Now it's back. When we take this chunk of code here, and we put it inside here, the variable is the return value, the thing that came out of contains.
Yes.
It exists. It doesn't have a name anymore. So it's kind of like it's there for a second, but it just gets returned.
Is it a better practice to put it inside of a variable? It looks cleaner.
That's a great question.
It's easier to follow and read.
It's easier to debug. That's a great question, right? Because when you do this, that means I can put a breakpoint here, and we'll talk about breakpoints tomorrow or the next day. That means I can see it, right? I can like hover over it. I can use it later. I can say console.writeline has mm-hmm. it. So we can test it, right? We can see, and then I can even go like this. This is like in a little extra, but like the variable has the value, and then remember the curly, go, right? For debugging, it's great. Where I think things go bad is when people start to try to be tricky and they put everything in one line, right? And then you have this and it goes on and on and on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, somewhere in there, something went bad.
Yep.
And I don't know where it is. And that's where you've probably done this, where you have to start breaking the code apart. You start splitting one line into multiple lines, right?
Yes.
So the challenge is debuggability, like there's a bug and I want to look for it, versus like cleanliness or readability, you know? I look at it as like, have you ever read like a book or a poem, and they say something that's just so crisp, where it's like in like seven words, they said something amazing. And you're just like, mm-hmm. ooh, that was good.
So cool. Yeah, yeah.
But you have to unpack it. You have to disassemble it because you're like, man, every word meant something. And I look at that and I'm like, I'm not a good writer. And I would say, oh, that would have took me two paragraphs to say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That happens in code, right? I'll just sit there and like look at a line like, what in the heck is going on? I would have done it as like if then else, mm-hmm. it would have been like this mm-hmm. much code. I'm like, how did they do that?
In
the
one.
Challenge yeah. is learning how to think about the code that way. and then you sacrifice readability. And I think as we become more advanced, we're going to get better and better at this kind of stuff. Let's get a little bit farther along as we can get into typecasting before we count down. We've only got about 10 more minutes here. I hope folks are having fun. This, I think, is pretty interesting. Oh, Sunil is asking if they wanted to see the overloaded contains. So thank you for that question. Let's open that up. So we have 6 different versions of contains. So when you're saying, does a string contain something, you can look for a character, one character. You can pass in a comparison rule. How do you want to do the comparison? That's a little advanced. You can say, does the string contain a string? This gets a little complicated. We'll talk about enumerables probably tomorrow or the next day. So the contains here is trying to do the most common stuff. Usually it's a character or it is a string. Now moving forward just a little bit here, we've got comments. This is how you make a single line comment. You go //, this is my comment. And you can type whatever you want in here. I've even seen people, have you ever seen any ASCII art? Like someone like draw a box?
Yep.
Kind of cool. Like I've seen people do really complicated, silly stuff like this. Now notice how I'm like having to make a line each time. That's kind of a hassle. So then I could do a multi-line comment. Yeah, everything from here to here is going to be a multi-line comment. Isn't that cool? Abhishek in the chat here is saying that they like the notebooks idea. Isn't this clever?
I really like it. I like it a lot.
I feel like this is a cool way to learn because, you know, we could go and write our code like this, right? We talked about going into public static
so
void
much
main.
Stuff. Yeah.
A lot, right. But here we're kind of in a book. It's kind of like being in Microsoft Word. And if you go out and search for .NET interactive notebooks, you can learn about this stuff. Maria Nagaga on the .NET team, her team made .NET interactive notebooks. And she explains exactly how it works. How you can set it up. It's pretty cool. If you're familiar with what are called Jupyter notebooks, which uses Python, the concept of notebooks is not new. Putting C# in here is kind of new. And if I click over here, I haven't even talked about this. You see in the right-hand corner of our notebook, you can see F#, which is another language in .NET. As well as things like JavaScript. So you can use, since you're a JavaScript TypeScript person, you could make a TypeScript or a JavaScript notebook if you wanted. And that'd be a great way to learn as well. All right, let's try to get into variable types. And we'll leave people with variable types before we leave. Okay, so here, and we've been talking about strings. Now we've got integers, like 10, doubles, which are like really big numbers. And this is kind of weird. You don't see this a lot.
Yeah.
Let's remove that and see what that is. Still works, okay? I believe that's called a type specifier. Double C# type specifier. Might get the name wrong. There's all these different numbers. Once you get into numbers, things get really complicated. Strings are easy, but numbers are stressful. You want to have a number. How much number do you want? Like if you have a float or a double or a decimal, it takes up more and more size, 4 bytes, 8 bytes, 16 bytes. You probably don't want to put someone's age in a decimal because no one's age is 28 digits long, right? And we're talking about, you know, huge, huge numbers. And what you can do if you go and read about this stuff is you put a little specifier at the end of the number. And that says that's a decimal. That M means a decimal, and this D means that's a double. But it's kind of implied, and that really depends on the system. If I go and type in something else, let's go and try like 10.5 for int. again, we see that comparison, that conversion thing. Can't implicitly convert a double to an int. So integers don't get decimal points. They don't. You're not allowed. And you could try to force it. You can like shove it in and see if that works. But even then, what happens? Let's see what happens. Console.WriteLine I. Oops, forgot my semicolon. I always do that. Hang on. I might have made a mistake. I'll make a mistake at the end of our show here, which will be fun. String, this is the value of I. I need to say, I may have to say toString. Okay, there we go. Where'd that 0.5 go? It got hacked off. We just basically, we cast it so much that it's like, listen, integers don't get fractions. You just don't get it. So you can cast it. You can basically say, you know, square peg into a round hole. I'm going to push this decimal in there no matter what you say. I'm making it happen. But it's like, okay, I mean, it's on you. I'm chopping that decimal part off. You just completely lost it. So if I had like 11 point, da, 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 this is all important information. Well, sorry. That's why these explicit casts, a cast of like changing a type into another type, it's kind of aggressive. You're like, I mean, I'm not going to do it for you, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to implicitly convert it. So I can do it explicitly, but you need to tell me. Karen in the chat is asking about this notebook.
Yes.
I believe that this notebook is over in, if you have installed the education pack, you hit Control Shift P and you can type getting.NET getting started. So this, I'll just, for those of us who may have come late, you go to .NET/learn to code right here, put that in the chat, say. And if you've installed this here, we will have, we've put that on your hard drive. So then you hit Control Shift P and say .NET getting started. I believe it's on GitHub as well. I don't know exactly where that is right now. And I've only got 2 minutes left, but we'll get a little bit into that later. But you can see that it's down here in my extensions folder. But that's why you hit Control Shift P, you type getting started, and it'll appear right there. That was installed with the education pack. We've only got about a minute and a half. Thank you, Karen. Only got a minute and a half left. So we're just kind of getting started here. We're just dipping our toes in the in this world. If you don't have that getting started, Abhishek, then you probably did not install from the education pack. These are the things that you'd need: the education bundle, the .NET extension pack, and .NET interactive notebooks. So these three things you would install yourself if you didn't go and install that. So Abhishek, the way that you would get that for Ubuntu is you have Visual Studio Code, you have .NET. Go and install the education bundle, the education pack, and interactive notebooks, and you will get that. So this is day one. We're just touching the beginnings of C Sharp, but I think that I'm learning a lot. I'm reminding myself how these things work. I hope you're having fun, yeah. Sharita.
I am learning a lot. Yeah. You put things into perspective and it helps to glue them in so that you
it
know.
It does help to glue them in. I appreciate that. And I appreciate your TypeScript perspective as you start digging into C Sharp. Tomorrow, we're going to go a little bit deeper. And I would encourage you to invite your friends to spend some time with us as well. And thank you to our friends on the chat and to Jamie and Rebecca for helping us manage the chats and the questions as well.
Thank you all so much, guys. This was really great. This was wonderful.
All right. We'll see you tomorrow.
Everyone have a good one. See you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.